welcome to HockeyCast 3.12, where there again, there's no Michigan hockey, and so everything is in play, including Alex's chess parties. So I have three pieces of news items of the day. One, I'm really close to getting Craig to get us all deals from Argentsoft. Two, I got a really sweet brand new like office chair for my like office in my basement because I've been sitting on this terrible chair and I put it together last night. And it's very nice and very comfortable. And three, I went to Culver's for lunch. Which one of those do you want to talk about, Alex?
Where'd you get the office chair from?
That was not what I was expecting. I ordered it from Amazon, but it's like one of those gamer's chairs. So it has like a footrest and it's like leather and padded and you can like lean back at different angles. It's like, I mean, you have to see the other chair that I was using. It was absolutely atrocious and I should never have been sitting on that for the last 10 months, but...
Should have gotten it from Staples.
Why?
Staples was my favorite store as a kid.
Is it still?
I mean, not really, but I do love office supplies.
Can we also talk about Culver's? You talked to me about Culver's all this time, and I was out in this afternoon. And
why
I was
were
like,
you? Were you by the Z Road Culver's, or did you go there on purpose? Was it? Did you go out of your way to get it, or were you just at Lowe's and you stopped there?
I was not at Lowe's, but I was out running some errands and at my during lunch, and I needed to get like lunch because I was hungry. It was like 2 o'clock. And so I was like, I'm going to get Culver's because that has place holds special meaning to you.
Yeah, I don't get it for lunch very often. I mean,
Did you get
a concrete mixer with it?
No, because I was going to have dinner tonight.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I always get the concrete mixer, so then it's really more dinner, right? Because you get the meal, the side, the ice cream. That's a dinner, not a lunch.
Okay, so. That's fine. But I'm never really going to probably go to Panda. Sorry, you're not. I did that. That was a section of my life, and I don't really do that anymore. But I know that's your lunch place. And so I wasn't really going to go there. So I had to incorporate. I was trying to involve you because it was your birthday this weekend.
It was.
And that is part of my tribute to you. This podcast is going out to you, Alex.
As my friend likes to say, I had the first birthday that begins the rest of your life where every birthday is bad. Once you turn 21, every birthday is good. After you turn 21, there's no reason to have more birthdays.
Wow.
So now that I'm 22, it's just a downward trend.
This is a very uplifting
podcast. Unless you're
going
to run for...
If any of you are down out there, you probably want to turn it off right now because
unless you're planning on running for Congress and then 25 and 30 are big birthdays. But otherwise, you've hit all the milestones by the time you're 21. And after that, it's all downhill. So...
You might get a deal from Craig on Marginsoft.
Are you wrapped up in family lawsuits? Or?
I'm not. I don't think I've ever been involved in a lawsuit.
I have, but that's another story.
Okay, wow. You have a lot of good stories. All right, so we should probably move on to talking about some sort of hockey. I checked the scores of the Michigan games this weekend, and they didn't play again, so we're not going to talk about that. But there were other games played, and there were two large sweeps. One of them, you could kind of see coming. The other one was... sort of out of left field. We'll talk about the one that we anticipate a little bit more first. Notre Dame beat Ohio State. What was it, like a combined 14-2 or
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I mean, they just,
like
they ejected Ohio State just right out of the, just right out of the building.
Like,
which,
like a VHS tape?
Yeah. Which, you know, that's not the style Notre Dame normally plays, but...
I mean, it is this year?
Yeah, they are definitely playing more open this year. The league is hard to get a handle on because you have Notre Dame. They're high-flying. They beat Minnesota, right? Everyone's excited about Notre Dame. Then, boom, they get swept by Michigan. They really have a rough week against Penn State. Everyone's down on them, and now they come right back out. And again, Ohio State's probably the worst team in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
But they just swept them right off the ice. So that, you know, is a way for Notre Dame to get back in the hunt, more or less. They're outside the tournament picture. They need to get wins later in the season. They have some opportunities to do that, plus the tournament. So there will be some chances for them down the road. But you can't forget about Notre Dame, even though they're not on Michigan's schedule anymore. And banking those wins got them back above Michigan for the moment in the standings. They're now, what, 4 points ahead of Michigan, but Michigan's got two games in hand. So if Michigan responds with a sweep in kind in their two games they need to make up, then they can move right back in front of Notre Dame. But the Irish are still alive and kicking in the standings. That's, I think, the takeaway from that. The other takeaway from that is, if we're looking at what potential first-round matchups Michigan can have if they do not win the conference outright, which they now can because of a thing we'll talk about in a moment, Michigan would love to play Ohio State first. I mean, that's what I can say about this weekend.
That is the prize for finishing second, even though it's only one game.
Well, we don't know if Michigan State will finish below Ohio State. I mean, they're basically tied at the moment, and we'll see what happens down the line. I mean, it's very feasible Ohio State could finish ahead of Michigan State.
Yes.
But just from in terms of who matches up well with Michigan, Michigan has a clear advantage over Ohio State. They don't know how to turtle, and they just don't have the guys to hang with some of these big teams. And we saw that when Michigan really beat them down. They get beat down by Notre Dame. I mean, Ohio State's bad this year, and they match up well, whereas Michigan State can park the bus on you.
Uh-huh.
They can have a game where you outchance them, 15-3, but you don't score any goals, and they get a goal off a triple deflection, right, and you lose 1-0. That can happen against Michigan State.
It's very Michigan.
Ohio State doesn't really have the capability to do that. So if we're just looking at jostling for positioning here in the stretch run, I would much rather face Ohio State in the first round.
Well, I asked you in prep, I was like, are they good at anything? And you were like, no.
I mean, their power play looked okay.
Against us?
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have many good chances, but they did score a couple goals. I mean, that was the only thing you could even remotely point to.
One of them via probably the worst offsides rule ever, and the other one was with 10 seconds left in the game. So, yeah, I'm not really buying Ohio State.
I mean, Napier's still a decent goalie.
That is true. He did keep them in that first game for much too long.
Yep.
So the second sweep was, it wasn't even just like that it was a sweep, because those can happen, but Wisconsin sweeps Minnesota, who was the number one team in the country, I believe, coming in.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, but they don't just sweep them, they obliterate them. It was 4-1 and 8-1.
Yeah, that was, there was blood on the ice, we'll say that.
And they beat them, they split with them 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, so Wisconsin takes 3 out of 4 from Minnesota on the season, and those two wins this weekend were in Minneapolis.
I believe so, yes.
So, yeah, Wisconsin, they're now the number one team. They're in pole position in the horse race, and there's a lot of reason to be excited about Wisconsin. I mean, the fact of the matter is they have not had their full team for much of this year.
That is true.
And Dylan Holloway's only played a little bit this season, and he has taken a massive, massive jump. I mean, last year Holloway was kind of disappointing as a hotshot freshman who had NHL draft prospects, and he just didn't produce a lot. He was definitely in the number 4, number 5 option offensively for them behind Turcotte and Caulfield and even Linus Weisbach. But this year, with Turcotte out of the picture, another year under his belt, Holloway's taking a huge jump. And you got to think that Kenny Holland and the Edmonton Oilers are very excited to watch what he's been doing since they picked him in the first round of the draft back in October. And what he's done in the small amount he's played has been extremely impressive. Not to mention the fact that Cole Caulfield is having a Hobie-type season, which Marc Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens are probably very excited about seeing as well. Caulfield's got, what is he at now? Almost 30 points, I think, in close to 20 games.
I think
to pull up the stats on that one. But he's been terrific, was great again this weekend. So was Holloway. They both stuffed the stat sheet. and, they also have some complimentary guys in Weisbach. Ty Pelton, Bice.
That's the guy that you mentioned when we played against him. You thought he was very good.
Well, he was the one that was kind of filling the Holloway spot, because Holloway wasn't there when Michigan played him.
Right.
And the other Caulfield, Brock, is not really a pro prospect the way Cole is. I remember someone compared them to Wayne and Brent Gretzky in the
bit of a difference there
in the gap. But after kind of being sort of a bottom six type player for most of his college career, Brock has really raised his game, and getting to play with Cole and those offensive drivers, they've been able to produce. I mean, they don't have a lot of guys on the defensive side that that jump out to you the way Keandre Miller did last year as a puck mover, but the defense has been night and day, and they're not allowing many goals. I mean, this weekend they shut down Minnesota's offense, and they've got two goalies that are playing really well in Rowe and Badoon. And all put together, it's a team that's clicking right now, and it's going to be fascinating to watch them come in and play Michigan this weekend. And Minnesota has now got a lot of questions. I mean, they built this early lead, and now all of a sudden it's gone. They need help.
Yeah,
they need
not.
Michigan to beat Wisconsin to get back in the driver's seat in the conference. And as we alluded to earlier, we are now on hashtag team control our own destiny. Because in theory, if Michigan wins every game the rest of the season, they win the conference.
Yeah, so you like DM'd me, I think it was during game one, and you were like, are you seeing this score? And I wasn't at the time, and I mentioned it to Craig, and he's like, yes. And I was like, why are you excited about this? He's like, because if we win every game for the rest of the season, we win the conference. I was like, well, that's a lofty goal. But I suppose, yes, now Michigan does control their own destiny. And, I mean, I don't know. It's not like they haven't had a good start to the second half.
And for the record,
not dropping a game is...
For the record, Minnesota didn't step on an upturned rake. Minnesota got smacked in the back with a rake. Like, they didn't trip over themselves. They got beaten by a team that was better than them. I mean,
how do you protect yourself from someone hitting you in the back with a rake?
Wear a coat.
Right.
I don't know.
Of armor?
But no, this was not Minnesota. I mean, again... It's not necessarily, obviously Minnesota played poorly in the sense they got blown off the ice.
Sure.
However, again, Wisconsin's a good team. This was not, oh, we got swept by Michigan State or something. This was, there might be a better team than Minnesota in the conference, and it might be Wisconsin.
So let's transition into talking a little bit about that. So Michigan is going to, well, in theory, play them this weekend. We haven't heard anything.
I would think that will happen, given that basketball is trying to play Sunday.
Right, and they have...
I mean, they
have
the pause ended on Sunday, so they get 5 days to practice to get ready for the weekend series. So I am of the assumption it will happen.
And they have postponed Michigan's game against Michigan State
on
tomorrow,
Tuesday, yeah.
Or today, when you're probably listening to this. But nothing has been said so far about this weekend, so I assume that those games, as of now, are still on. It probably would have been nice to play not as red hot of a team after having a couple weeks off, but I mean, Michigan's going to draw the Badgers, and you know, they played them well the first time around. I know you mentioned that they didn't have their full complement of players, but
Michigan was the better team, and I think it was pretty clear in that
all their best players were their freshmen, and it was like games 3 and 4 of their career.
Yeah, so both teams are definitely farther along now.
Yeah, and you mentioned both goalies. You know, that was the thing that tripped them up last year. It was like they couldn't keep pucks out of their net.
Yep.
They're doing it this year. They're scoring in different levels. And, like, is this good? Would you have wanted this to happen, like Wisconsin to sweep Minnesota?
I don't really know what you want to happen. I mean,
yeah.
If Michigan can go out and sweep Wisconsin, then yes, it was good that that happened. But
and then they can sweep Minnesota. And then they can never lose. Yeah, I mean, like, I get the thinking behind it. I just think that, like... I mean, it feels...
If you want to win the conference, you got to beat the best teams.
That's
Michigan
true.
Needed help to control their own destiny. Now they control their own destiny. If you want to run with the big dogs, you got to be a big dog. And that's what they had the chance to prove this weekend.
That's true. And it's a weird Saturday-Sunday series.
I think
it's
5 and 2.
I think it's Saturday afternoon.
Or 2 and 5.
And then Sunday evening. I don't know.
Yeah, 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock is my memory.
I have a bone to pick with these times, but, you know, hey, that's fine.
It doesn't overlap with basketball on Sunday, so that's a plus.
Yeah, I'll take that as a starter. So that's coming up this weekend.
Also, can we discuss the Ewing theory? You know what the Ewing theory is?
Yeah, Bill Simmons.
Yeah, yeah.
Get better after you lose a good player.
Yeah. Can we talk about the Ewing theory with Alex Turcotte in Wisconsin? Is this a conversation we're ready to have?
I mean, maybe, but like they also lost Miller, right?
Keandre. Yeah.
I don't really think it has anything to do with that, though, because, I mean, was he like a dominant player that was just taking over and nobody could touch him, and then they lose him and all of a sudden they get better? Like,
well,
that's
sometimes
kind of, but that's what the Ewing theory is about, right?
The Ewing theory is supposed to be about, like, how the player adversely affects the team, right?
Oh, from like a, yeah.
But you can make the Ewing theory whatever you want it to be. I mean,
as long as it
involves a good player leaving and then the team getting better, you can make the Ewing theory whatever you want.
Isn't that what happened with Ken Griffey Jr. and the Mariners back in like 2000?
I don't know. I was one.
Oh. Well, you seem to reference a lot of 1980s hockey, so I felt like that would have been a safe
comparison.
All I know
is we need to start tweeting about how Alex Turcotte was a cancer on Wisconsin and get some Kings fans riled up.
What do you have against Kings fans?
I don't know, but anyway, Wisconsin, you know, they've really put it together this year, and you have to credit Tony Granato and his mullet for that.
Yeah, because he was on the hot seat a little bit at the end of last year.
Yeah, he was on my hot seat. I mean, I had him listed as a coach who was, you know, because that was the thing, right? He recruited a lot of guys early on and then hasn't had the results to back up the early recruiting.
Yeah.
Now he might be getting that. So.
Yeah, I think it was a gift that Caulfield came back, right?
Yeah, he can thank Mark Bergevin for that, but... they've got to be CHN's Team of the Week. Have they already been chosen yet? I haven't visited it.
No, because it's Tuesday. I mean, we were going to talk a little about the standings and the power rankings. We could jump right into that. Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, you mentioned something about how they shot up to in the polls to like 5 or something, or 4, I think. They were 7 going into this past weekend. Obviously, they're going to be much higher. I assume they jump past Michigan and Minnesota, because how could you not put them there? I assume Michigan drops to probably 5 or so. It's getting really interesting because you have 3 Big Ten teams in the top, presumably 5 or 6. And, you know, I think that bodes well for Michigan, assuming that they make the tournament. Of course, given where they're ranked, they should, as long as they don't step on said upturned rake. Because they're playing good competition. I mean, even Notre Dame, and you mentioned how much better Penn State has gotten. So when you start playing teams like this, you know, that gets you ready. I remember going to Cincinnati about a few years ago when Michigan played Notre Dame and then they lost to North Dakota. And there was a quote from a senior on the team. I can't remember exactly who it was. But after the Notre Dame game and then they lose to North Dakota, he said, you know, this is the first time in my career we've played a game like this. And I just wish I would have been better prepared for it. And I thought that was really interesting because Michigan hadn't made the tournament in a while before that. And played in those big games. But now going into presumably the tournament this year, they will be playing against, you know, the top teams in the country. And it's not like they just have to get stuck playing against some throwaway teams and all of a sudden face a real hockey team.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably only to their benefit, even if it does mean, you know, a little bit more cloudiness in the league or finishing lower. I will say that the frustrating part is, you know, there is... you know, a decent chance that they do still do finish third, which feels like, well, that's kind of like been their ceiling the last few years too.
It's a different third though.
It is. I agree, except that, you know, numbers don't change.
And also, I mean, it's Michigan is powered off freshmen. The other teams aren't as much. I mean, Wisconsin's riding guys that have a year under their belt. Minnesota's got a deeper, more veteran team. So this was a Michigan team that potentially is going to get better down the stretch. It looked like they were getting better in January. Now we have to see what it looks like when they remove from exile.
Yeah, and they will have, I believe it's Wisconsin and then our little buddies in Columbus after that. So if they can do well with Wisconsin, that's a big if.
And by the way, Wisconsin has an easier schedule down the stretch than Minnesota does. I mean, this is very much Wisconsin's biggest weekend. If they can get through Michigan, they are in a really good position to win the conference. I sent you what the schedule was if you want to read.
Yeah, they're at Michigan. They're hosting Notre Dame, who also is probably still pretty good. They get Ohio State, and then they go to Michigan State.
Yeah, so those last 4 games, they're definitely looking pretty. And you get Notre Dame at home. I mean, this weekend at Michigan is their biggest weekend. If they can pull this off, they are going to be very hard to touch.
I mean, Minnesota isn't that different. They go to Notre Dame. They host State. They go to Penn State.
But they get Penn State. The difference between playing Penn State and
Ohio State
is huge. Yeah. I mean, that's an actual possibility of losing a game there.
That is nice to say about any sort of Ohio State team. Even in tennis. Like, they're good in tennis. Like, what?
They're not very good in softball.
All right.
Except the one time I was there to do a doubleheader game. I did a doubleheader softball broadcast solo. I was talking by myself for like 5 hours.
How was that?
It was exhausting.
How much water did you go through?
A lot. Michigan clobbered them in the first game and then had a 1-0 lead until like the bottom of the 7th inning, and then Ohio State tied it and then won in extras. It sucked. But
I mean, you're a Michigan fan. You're used to that in pretty much anything.
But we're generally pretty good against them in softball anyway. So
Anyway, so we can do a quick rundown of the standings. You sort of referenced them a little bit, but we'll go in by points per game just because teams have played different amounts. But Wisconsin's at 2.13, which, again, surprise there. Minnesota at 2.06 after their great start and struggled a little bit more in the second half. Notre Dame's at 1.69 and Michigan at 1.64. But Michigan does have those two games in hand, so they do, again, like you said, control their own destiny. Penn State's at 1.25. That's a significant bit behind both the Michigan and Notre Dame pairing. And then you have Michigan State at 0.94, and Ohio State is down at 0.89. So, yeah. Probably not a lot of upward mobility from those bottom three teams unless we have the upturned rake theory. And, I mean, at this point, you're looking at probably Notre Dame and Michigan finishing third and fourth, but, you know, Michigan does have the long shot of an opportunity of, you know, a double sweep against those top teams because they do play them both yet, which in this case, you know, if you're looking to try to finish first, that's a good thing because you can gain points.
Yeah.
But you can't have splits. Like, they can't split with Wisconsin this weekend. Like, that would be...
It's an acceptable thing for tournament, for an NCAA tournament.
It is for sure, but if you're trying to...
If you split with Minnesota and Wisconsin and win every other game, you're coasting into the tournament, the NCAA tournament, given what we know about these power rankings.
That's true.
And I would not be angry about that. Like,
no.
I would be like, this is a team that's capable of winning it all if you split those, right? I mean, like, if Wisconsin and Minnesota are top six or eight teams in the country, if you split with them, that says you're good enough to win it all, right? Like,
yeah.
Let's be frank. It's the fact is Michigan has had some issues in the fall and has put them in this situation, like, several years in a row where now it's like, oh, to win the conference, we have to be flawless.
Win every game.
And hockey, it's very hard to be flawless.
Yeah. No, you're right. And if you take a conference of Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan, it doesn't matter. One of those teams has to finish third.
I mean, Big Ten's probably the top-heaviest, you know, team with the most national title contenders at the top, either them or the NCHC. So
yeah.
It's not like Michigan is struggling to win the WCHA or something.
That would be a completely different podcast. So that's pretty much our Big Ten hockey beat, I guess. Do we do a beat? Are we on a beat?
That's really an update.
Update? All right. You mentioned something about running through some NHL stuff because we are a hockey podcast. And
allegedly.
We or a Lions podcast, as we've also been called.
Or a tennis podcast.
We did one segment on tennis.
All right.
We've referenced the Lions, I think, in every episode. Did you ever watch Psych?
No.
I was one of my favorite TV shows years ago, and they did a thing where they hit a pineapple in every episode. So okay. People gone back and tried to find the pineapple. It's like, I wonder if people go back and listen to like all of our podcasts and try to find our lines.
There's been one F-bomb per week. You just haven't been able to hear it. It's hidden in there.
Because we have a good editor. So we just kind of run through what's going on in the NHL. I've been watching, well, a little bit less now that the Avs are on their COVID break, just like the other hockey team I follow. So,
but your Islanders didn't.
They won.
Game away on Saturday.
They did. They beat Pittsburgh, who apparently is not very good on defense. And they've like been in a ton of games and have like gone to, I believe, two or three overtimes and haven't been able to win. But
I was watching their game against Washington a few weeks back. Well, it was a few weeks ago. I was watching it on Friday because I record some of these games and go back and watch them. And
nice,
the Islanders. They're just hard to watch. They've got so many guys that are just names, right? Like Casey Cizikas. I've seen him I've seen him play a million times. I still don't remember what his playing style
is.
He's
a fourth liner.
You know, there's just so many guys that just have names, and that's...
What about Matt Barzal? You know what?
One exciting player, but like...
Anders Lee?
Lee's okay. I mean, he's a nice guy in front of the net, but like Brock Nelson, Cal Clutterbuck.
Clutterbuck's their fourth liner.
Like,
you're naming their fourth line like three times.
Okay, I'm just saying. Think about the
Jordan
defense.
Jordan Eberle's been good.
Yeah, Eberle's good. But like Ryan Pulock, Adam Pellick, those are fine players. You're just like, I've never heard of these people. Like, I've heard of them, but they're just names.
They're just good defensemen. Yeah.
All hail Barry Trotz, though. That's all you need to know about the Islanders.
Yeah. No, that's very true. So I guess since we're talking about the Islanders, we can talk about the East, which is probably the most stacked division in the NHL.
The West has the most championship contenders, but it's very top-heavy.
Sure, but aside from three teams there, there's not a whole lot to talk about. The Islanders made the Final Four last year, and they're not even probably considered in the top four or five teams.
Yeah, Boston's probably number one, although they've definitely gotten a bit of luck early on, but obviously they're a very good team. I mean, they still have maybe the best line in the NHL, which has been the case for like 4 years now, because Patrice Bergeron never ages, and David Pastrnak only gets better at scoring goals.
He has a great name.
Get ready for him to score like 8 goals in the Olympics next year, because he will be Czech Republic's entire team. And Philly has good forwards. They have a legit goalie. I don't know about their defense.
They're still pretty young, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, they've got some depth with Voracek and Giroux and Hayes and Konechny. I mean, they have some players, but I just don't know if you can win a championship with that defensive group. But they're a good team regardless. You know, Washington, it's the same mold as always. I mean, Ovechkin keeps climbing up the board. He passed Mike Gartner in the all-time goals list this weekend. I think it was got 708 or 709 this weekend. Always great there. Their goaltending's new, though, because Holpe's gone. They're trying different guys out there.
But they're winning.
They're winning. And, you know, Pittsburgh
has about 3 players.
They
2.5 players.
They're top-heavy, as always, but when you have that makeup of guys, it's hard to not be at least in the playoff hunt, and they seem like they'll be there. The Islanders in the playoff hunt as well. And I think Buffalo could be in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, Buffalo's
played
well.
I like Buffalo, but they
have a good power play, I think.
Yeah, they have a really good top 6 group. Their defense is shaky. Their goalies are shaky.
Yeah.
But they've got one of the better top lines in the league Reinhart, Eichel, and
Taylor Hall. Who they somehow convinced to come to Buffalo for a year?
Well, it made sense for Taylor Hall because he needed to do a prove-it one-year deal.
He's going to go to Buffalo?
Well, because he can play with Eichel. I mean, Eichel, okay. That was a really good fit for him.
They might not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, but if he scores a bunch of goals, that's all that matters. I mean, he's in a contract year.
I guess. I just would also.
He
like
needs
to do
the Jeff Skinner special and score 40 in his contract year.
Now he's on the fourth line, too.
Yeah, Skinner, that contract was an albatross the moment it was signed.
Yeah.
Speaking of contracts, we're an albatross the moment they signed. Tyler Myers in Vancouver.
So are we going to the North Division?
Yeah,
now?
The North is the best division, just for pure entertainment value.
Okay.
It needs to be a thing constantly. Like
just because they have the Canucks?
No, just the Canadian division. Like, it's just incredibly fun to watch. There's a lot of scoring. It's some of the most passionate fan bases.
That's because everyone's paying the Canucks.
Yeah. Tyler Toffoli is in the top 5 goal scorers in the NHL right now, almost purely off of the Canucks. He's got 8 goals in 12 games for Montreal, and I think 7 of the 8 have come against Vancouver, his former team. He just goes off against the Canucks. The Canucks have been kind of befuddling in some ways because, I mean, they last year were an interesting team. They made the playoffs. They beat the Blues, who had the best record in the regular season. But it's just gone horribly wrong so far for Vancouver, and it definitely looks dire. I mean,
their defense is horrendous, and their goaltending is not much better, right?
What's fascinating about Vancouver is that they have stars on entry-level deals, yet they're already in salary cap hell, and I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, I was about to say, how do you even do that?
Eriksson's deal is atrocious. Tyler Myers' deal is terrible. There's a few other really bad contracts that are weighing them down. But the thing is that's fascinating is it's not the depth that's their problem, which is a problem in general we thought was going to be the bane of their season. The problem is that their stars are playing very, very poorly.
I mean, it's tough to win whenever that happens.
And that is unfortunately involving a pro blue old friend in Quinn Hughes, who's having an extremely rough season, doing his best Phil Housley impression, where he's leading, I think, the NHL in scoring by a defenseman, yet is just awful. I mean, it's pretty.
So he's basically a fourth forward. So
yeah, basically.
They're playing a 1-4.
I mean, it's
more or less.
It's rough to be the best scoring defenseman in the league, and yet you're a net negative to your team because.
I mean, we saw that.
But it's not just him. I mean, it's the entire defense. Alex Edler is just getting abused. I mean, it's Elder abuse right now. I mean,
Edler abuse?
Yeah. Elder and Edler abuse because he's ancient and should not be playing heavy minutes. Like, it's just a mess.
Who's going to win that division?
Either Montreal or Toronto, most likely.
All right, is there anyone else?
So here's an interesting thing. We have not had a Montreal-Toronto playoff series since the late 70s.
Oh, wow. Even includes my lifetime. We don't even have to reference your lifetime.
We need it to happen so badly. It needs to happen.
It would happen in the year where no one can attend these games.
Except the problem is that Toronto probably has to win a playoff series to get to that, and that will never happen. So.
What about the Jets? Do they have a chance?
Well, Kyle Connor, if we're talking about happier pro blue segments, he's had a very nice year, and they've got good forwards. They executed the Dubois for Line A trade. We'll see how that goes, but they've got the best forwards, you know, maybe in the entire division. I mean, Toronto probably does slightly better, but it's hard to beat Winnipeg's group, and they've got a great goalie in Hellebuck. Their defense is still a horror show, but a great goalie can paper over a lot of those defensive cracks, which is their formula. And I still like Calgary, too. Ottawa is shockingly bad, but
Wait a minute. Shockingly? Are you surprised?
Oh, I thought they were going to be bad, but I thought they were not going to be this bad. They're real, real, real bad. The one plus, though, is that their whole roster is young guys. So that's you can see glimmers of the future.
When are they going to call up?
And Josh Norris has done okay.
He has a few goals this year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've got Tim Stützle, who's scoring their first-round pick. So there's some glimmers of hope, but it's a rough year for Ottawa.
What about the McDavid and Draisaitl show in Edmonton?
So Dom Lashusen from The Athletic, who's a very good analytics writer, was talking about how the Draisaitl and McDavid start to the year is one of the greatest starts to the year in the analytical era. It's right up there with Crosby, Malkin, I think 2011 or 2010, one of those years. Mm-hmm. The complaint with those guys has always been defense. Their defense has been better this year. The Oilers' defense as a team is still worse, but they've brought that up, and they're scoring like crazy. McDavid is over 2 points per game, which
insane.
Has not been done since the 90s. They're a lot of fun to watch, and that's the great thing, right? You have the Toronto group of great forwards. You've got the Winnipeg group of great forwards. You've got the Edmonton group of great forwards. You got Tyler Toffoli in beast mode all the time in Montreal. And then you got Vancouver, who, even though they're giving up 9 goals a game, Elias Pettersson is still fun to watch. Hughes can make some fun plays. So it's just an exciting division. It's a lot of scoring. It's a great positive for the league.
How many of those teams can win the Cup?
Only Toronto and Montreal.
Okay. All right, let's go to maybe the most, I don't know. I feel like it's the most boring division, but the Central
is there
anything interesting about this division?
The NHL does those 5-minute recaps of each game, and I try to watch, you know, the recaps of every game that I didn't see from the previous night.
That's impressive.
But whenever it's like Carolina, Columbus, I'm like, I don't want to watch this.
Didn't have 11 goals last night or 2 nights ago?
With that crazy offsides thing, but we don't need to get into that right now. Right. I'm always just like, Dallas, Nashville. No, I don't want to watch.
Is there anyone in that team worth watching in that division worth watching other than Tampa?
Well, Carolina's a really good team, and Dallas probably is too. They just don't make me want to watch.
Well, Dallas is the Islanders.
Maybe if Carolina moved back to Hartford, I would watch their highlights. But
you just don't like their uniforms.
The Hartford Whalers had some of the best uniforms in the sport, and it's very sad that they got moved to Carolina. I don't love Hartford as
a
city
or
as a market, but
that flag's pretty cool. The hurricane flag?
Yeah, and then what's the thing they do before the game? The storm.
Oh, when they start the siren thing?
The siren thing.
Like the Iowa State thing where they the cyclone alarm.
Compromise. Move Carolina to Quebec. Hashtag justice for the Nordiques. Tampa's really good, and Carolina's a great dominant possession team with a lot of young players. Dallas is a weird mix of dull defense with...
one
basically being the senior citizen home for Pavelski and Radulov, and I mean, you know, Jamie Benn.
Maybe they'll trade for Edler.
Yeah, they should. He won't get to play at all because they've got six defensemen better than him.
Yeah.
But Miro Heiskanen is a really great player, and he's a lot of fun to watch. So at least there's that. Chicago is
not very good.
The Red Wings are better than their record appears, but they play the most boring style possible. Their defense isn't as bad as it looks. Their expected goals is actually quite good, but their expected goals for is a horrific.
They create nothing?
Yeah, they create nothing and they don't allow much. So they're just like the
Michigan
dull.
Michigan State?
Yeah. And then Columbus, I just don't care about very much. I just don't.
You and Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah.
All right, so let's
trade
go
me to Winnipeg.
Hey, I might hold you to that. In the West, then, you have the bottom end of that division. From the bottom five teams in those division, is there any one of those teams that's worth watching?
I like Minnesota because Kirill Kaprizov is one of the more exciting young guys in the league, currently the favorite for the Rookie of the Year. He was hidden in Russia for many years. Wild fans were wondering when he was going to come over year after year. Every summer it was devastating when it was like, nope, he's staying there another year. He finally came over, and he's been crazy fun to watch. outside of that, I mean, Jordan Greenway, remember when he was on BU and Michigan played him in the Frozen Four? He's a fun player.
Guy.
Yeah, he's a kind of, you know, muck it up in front of the net type player that's decently fun.
Is there anything interesting in California?
No, the Ducks are just boring.
Yeah, like, the Kings.
John Gibson made...
Kings are old, and everyone is signed. I didn't realize this, but isn't Doughty, like, signed for the next 6 years? Isn't he?
Yeah, Doughty is... For years, Doughty has been the classic analytics versus eye test debate.
Yeah.
So, like, here's the thing about being a defenseman in the NHL. Same thing with goaltending. Because the stats are harder to square with total evaluation. Once you get a reputation, it's hard to lose that reputation.
Okay.
And so if you're a good defenseman at one point, it takes 3 or 4 years after you've been bad for a while to then lose the reputation. So, like, he stopped being good several years ago. But to this day, there's still a group that's like, oh, it's Drew Doughty. He's pretty good. And then analytics people are like, well, have you watched him since 2016? Or, you know, not great. Andrei Kopitar is still really good, though. And they've got one of the best farm systems in the NHL. It's just, unlike Ottawa, a lot of the guys aren't on the roster yet.
So they're still a year or two away.
And the Sharks are in the 2017 Detroit Tigers thing, where it's like, this is going to be a long and extremely painful rebuild because you have no prospects whatsoever.
And
you didn't win a Stanley Cup out of it.
Because you win it. Because
you were so close for so many years. You didn't get it, and now it's going to be very painful.
And they
Sharks fans.
But they have Erik Karlsson, right?
Yeah, who's not really what he once was. But
who signed till forever.
Yeah, and again, they have no prospects because they hollowed out their... But so, there are three good teams in the division.
Yeah, and... One of them is on a pause. The other one was on a pause. And the third is the St. Louis Blues, who are defensive-oriented, good goaltending, and sort of the right mix of scoring in their top six.
Ryan O'Reilly is one of the most fun players to watch because he does it all. Mm-hmm. Just such a complete guy. Plays both ends of the ice. And, you know, Jordan Binnington had the great run a few years ago. He's a fine goalie overall. He's not a superstar, but he does enough. And they lost Pietrangelo on the blue line, but they brought in Torrey Krug, who's an okay replacement, and they still have dudes like Colton Parayko there to help.
Well, I mean, they play very defensive style, right? Then they sort of protect their goalie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean they're a good team and they're well coached, so you know, they'll be relevant. They don't have, I think, the excitement factor of Colorado and Vegas, but they're going to be right in the hunt till the end.
And what do you like about Vegas?
So I was watching the game on Friday night. Vegas played L.A., and Vegas is just the way they run and gun in transition is crazy fun to watch. And Mark Stone is no doubt the best defensive player who has never won a Selke. I mean, it's been well known that he is the best defensive forward in the league and still has never won the Selke for some reason.
How many years has he played?
He's been around, I think, 8 or 9 years. He's got the most Selke top five finishes, I believe, without ever winning it in history. The Selke is even more extreme than defense and goaltending, where, like, the Selke, you have to be the best defensive player for, like, 5 years before you actually win it, because it's all about building a reputation.
So it's like the Hobie.
It is kind of like the Hobie. Shout out to Jimmy Vesey.
My least favorite college hockey player.
I mean, Stone's a great player. They've got two number one defensemen in Theodore and Pietrangelo, which is unfair. And they're deep. They're really well coached. And I love Vegas. And then, obviously, Colorado has two of the most fun players in the entire league.
If they can ever get healthy. If anyone can ever come back.
Yeah.
Everyone is, like, week to week, which is why probably going on the COVID pause was a blessing in disguise for the team because they got to skip the next week or two. And like the projections I'm seeing are saying that most of those guys should be back next week. And they're going to have an outdoor game on Lake Tahoe.
Not
on Lake Tahoe. It's actually on the golf course. And Pierre-Edward Belmar was in a press conference and it was pointed out to him that they weren't actually playing on the lake. And he was just like devastated. He was so excited to play like real pond hockey, and
it's going to be hard to play on a lake of that size.
Well, that's probably true, but
wonder how close they're playing to the Corleone family compound. It's a good joke for a certain listener, but
so McKinnon is probably the second best player in the league,
somewhere in the top four,
and
among forwards.
Makar is maybe the best young, exciting defenseman.
I mean, right now, he's the runaway favorite for the Norris. I mean, we're only 12 games into the season, but just on an eye test, this is the moment when the analytics and the eye test come together in harmony.
Is Cale Makar?
Yeah, because you watch him and you're like, wow, that guy is really good. And then the analytics say, yeah, he's the best defenseman in the league by a mile. I mean, right now, his analytics are just off the charts.
And he plays defense.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's just a guy who goes forward, but he actually makes smart moves and passes and uses his body well. And he's still, like, what, I think 21 or 2?
Yeah. I mean, he's continued the upward trajectory where other young defensemen have kind of fallen into a sophomore slump, let's say.
So the bummer thing about the COVID pause is, for the Avs anyway, was that their second line was coming together with Saad, Kadri, and Burkovsky. They were all healthy and starting to actually play well and score goals and create chances. And that is something that I was a little bit bummed on. I mean, it probably a net positive because of the injuries to MacKinnon and to Devon Toews, but the fact that they were finally starting to get that production from the second line is what you need to go from being, you know, a fun team and probably a watchable and winning games to being a contending team is you need to have lineup depth. And that's what it looked like they were starting to get.
What I'll say is that when Colorado has Byram, Makar, Toews, and Girard dressed as their top four defensemen, that's the best skating top four in the league, and it's not close.
And
the mobility between those four guys is unreal.
The thing about Byram that was crazy is, like, he's had a game or two where he hasn't looked great, but the way he's used his body and moved the puck just in the defensive end, and sometimes even backwards, where, like, you get the puck on the boards inside the blue line, and the correct play is to go backwards to around the net or to the other defenseman, and he's identified it a lot. So he seems ready to go, and he's contributed in the offensive end, like moving, getting past guys. He certainly can skate, like what you mentioned. And that's probably the interesting thing is because, you know, the Avs were sort of that big couple fun lines to watch, score a lot of goals, but they'll also give up a lot of goals. And, like, now their defensemen are actually maybe becoming one of the strengths of the team. And Philip Grubauer is also having one of the better years.
Yeah, Philip Grubauer is playing well.
Or starts to the year.
It's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight in the playoffs between those top three in the West.
You've got to win that division. Otherwise, you're facing a cup contender in the first round.
Yeah. So those are the stakes there. Overall, it's been a pretty fun year so far, and I'm looking forward to how it goes down the stretch. Just give me a Montreal-Toronto playoff series.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case? Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
The other big event of the weekend, other than us getting a deal from Craig Ross for Marginsoft.
And my birthday.
And yeah, you're like 18 now? Is that what you are?
We discussed this in the first segment.
Oh, 22. Two, yes. Well, it was a long segment. You might have aged since then. I don't know, maybe some of you watched a football game yesterday, the Super Bowl. It was built up to be kind of a big thing because you had the best old quarterback versus the newest best quarterback, I guess.
The Super Bowl is really the...
You have a take on it, and I will give you 10 seconds.
What do you want me to...
No, I'm just kidding. you give me a long Brady rant, and we were debating if we should
put this in. We were discussing the greatest athletes in the quotation marks, yeah, athletes of all time, because there are lots of ignorant sheeple out there, and we need to combat that.
Do we? I mean, that seems like a job for Mike Valenti. Do you want to be Mike Valenti?
I mean, it's like calling the Super Bowl champion the world champions, right? It's just like, I mean, there are other sports, right? Like,
but they do that in every sport.
Yeah, but football's the only one where all the players are from one country, except for that.
The kicker for the Falcons is from Korea.
Yeah, and the Canadian tackle for the Chiefs who didn't play the season, Duvernay Tardif.
Okay.
Yeah, but
anyway, do you have a takeaway on the game? You said to me that one of the more interesting things to you was Tampa's defense. You were not surprised with their offense.
So my prediction was 35-31 Chiefs. Mm-hmm. That definitely came true, but no, I mean, the 31 for the Buccaneers was not shocking. I mean, I knew they were going to play well on offense, and Brady's performance was not anything special to me. He was very good. That's what I expected.
Yeah.
But what, you know, Todd Bowles did, that will get him back in the hunt for head coaching jobs next year.
No. I've been there. And this did not work.
And thank God for, you know, that no one hired Eric Bieniemy, because if they had hired him, it would have been the same feeling Lions fans had when Matt Patricia was the defensive coordinator and gets blown up by Nick Foles in the Super Bowl. And we're like, yay, we're hiring this guy as our coach. One lucky fan base was spared from having to watch their future coach get detonated in the Super Bowl right before they get hired.
Okay, so you had a thing about commercials in the past.
Commercials used to be great.
Did you watch any of them yesterday?
I mean, they were on the television.
So,
but
no,
it didn't really process into my mind. I saw Bruce Springsteen moodily driving around in a car.
Matthew McConaughey was a cardboard fan.
Yeah, I walked upstairs because I was watching in the basement, and then the rest of the family was in the upstairs, and they were like, why is Matthew McConaughey Flat Stanley? And I'm just like, what's going on? And
So when did the commercials used to be good?
When I was a child.
When were you a child? Yesterday?
After Puppy
Saturday?
Monkey Baby or whatever that devilish creation was.
I don't even know what that is.
You don't remember that?
No.
Well, good.
Oh.
It will haunt your dreams.
Kind of. I remember like a reference to it.
Almost as scarring as the Wake Forest Demon Deacon mascot.
He's
or
great.
The Boilermaker guy. Anyway, I don't know. They're just not as funny as they were. Like, back in the day, it was like you go into school the next day, and everyone was like, these are the best commercials.
See, when I was a kid, the Bud Light commercials were amazing.
Did you like the E-Trade Baby?
I don't know. Oh, from years ago?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was funny.
Yeah, people thought he was. I mean, I thought he was okay, but that was like, those are the things we talked about, right? Like Betty White getting plastered in the Snickers ad. Remember that one where she's playing football, that's right?
Stupid.
Like, those were the ads people talked about, and now it's just like, okay.
See, like, you had the iconic, like, what's up, like, Budweiser commercials, and then they mocked that. They mocked themselves by doing, what are you doing commercials?
And there
that
wasn't
was
a,
great.
There wasn't a Clydesdale one this year.
That's true. See, my favorite ones were the Bud Bowls, Bud Light versus Budweiser, when the beer bottles were players, and
right,
they did updates like throughout the game. So like every few commercials, there'd be a new one, and you'd get to find out what's happening in the game. When I was a kid, like those were the best. I love those. I was always rooting for Bud Light because they were blue and not red.
Yeah, well, I didn't see any commercials. I also didn't see the halftime show because I was eating dinner.
Yeah, I kind of stopped watching.
But I saw
shows.
The memes, and that's how you know what happened
I'm not
in
really
the world
that.
Nowadays.
Yeah.
It's just that the video of the weekend, like, running down the light hallway. It's like you're in Zap Zone.
I was it kind of gave me motion sickness.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just glad, from my understanding, it was just him singing songs. Because that's the other thing that's annoyed me with halftime shows in recent years. Where it's just like, we're going to just cram as many artists on the show, you know, as
like
possible,
as many cameos,
right?
As you can get, right? Who are you gonna bring?
Yeah, it's like Maroon 5 and there's Travis Scott, and like we're gonna bring out this other person. Like, that's how it was in the late 90s early 2000s,
yeah,
where it's just like literally a thought experiment of which artists make no sense together on stage. Today's halftime show is gonna be Aerosmith, Britney Spears, and Aretha Franklin. Like, what? What?
And they're all gonna sing the same song.
I just want one artist singing songs. We don't need this to be, you know, the Masked Singer, where we're undressing the person and finding out who the surprise is.
Okay. Okay, so if the game wasn't as great, we thought we would do our gimmicky top five because we've learned what gimmicky means, and it is now an MGO tradition that until Michigan hockey plays another game, we have to do this. That is in our contracts that we wrote up ourselves. So this is going to be our favorite Super Bowls that we watched. So if you went back and watched a Super Bowl, not like the 30-minute highlight clips, but like you went back and rewatched the majority of or an entire game before your lifetime, you know, that was on before you were born, I'll allow that. I'm completely picking Super Bowls that I watched that were in my lifetime. So,
well, this is easy for me because the only good Super Bowls were in my lifetime. If you look at those rankings, they're literally all from the past 10 years.
This yours are.
No,
mine
not,
are not.
Not me. I'm just saying
I have
that
multiple from before you were
most
born.
Of the 70s and 80s Super Bowls were not competitive. Like John Elway just getting body slammed every year by the Redskins or some team like that. Anyway.
Okay, so why don't you start with your fifth option here?
All right. My number five was Super Bowl 41, the Colts-Bears Super Bowl.
You picked the Colts-Bears?
Okay.
And you're talking about like how terrible.
Okay,
this is played in the rain.
Okay. Three things here. Number one, it's got one of the 10 most iconic plays in Super Bowl history. The only thing anyone remembers about the game, which is Devin Hester running the opening kickoff.
And they still
back.
Lost by plural points. Lose by more than one point.
Number
plural
two,
scores.
It has significance. Peyton Manning was long maligned as a playoff choker. He wins his first Super Bowl. That's a narrative. I was also a Peyton Manning fan.
Oh, so here we go. This is why we're on the line.
Number three, it's got the greatest halftime show of all time, which is Prince in the Rain, which just dwarfs anything else. In that Super Bowl. So, all those three things together was pretty memorable. The team I wanted to win won. It's got a great play. It's got the best halftime show. So, that's my pick for number five. Not too high, but in a respectable place on the list.
All right. Well, if my dad's listening, he better cover his ears for my number five, because my number five is Super Bowl 25, Giants 20, and the Bills 19. It was a Scott Norwood missing field goal. But not because of that, but because of some other things. Like you do some research and you find out that, like, first of all, that was the first year that the K-Gun with Jim Kelly, like, kind of took the league by storm, and it was an offense that defenses didn't really know what to do with, and they would get run over. And so Belichick's plan for that game was, I'm going to give them looks where they have to run the ball. And so you're basically stopping the passing game by forcing them to run and trying to get a running back to run for 100 yards. And you have to think, this isn't, you know, 2018 when, okay, yeah, that's a good idea. This is 1990 when, you know, You if your running back runs for 100 yards, you automatically win and all that sort of stuff. And
Duncan Robinson hits a three-pointer. Remember that from 2018? If Duncan Robinson hits a three, we always won the game.
Yeah. So, like, I find that to be interesting. Plus, it was really, like, super compelling. It was one of those close games that was not what you were describing from back in that particular time. And I was a sort of pseudo-Giants fan. I was a Jets fan, but I liked the Giants because they were blue and they're from New York and I lived in New York. So that was sort of my throw in for the end of your Peyton Manning Super Bowl. But that was my number five.
I have to stick up for my Bills fans friends and point out that the Giants and Jets are not New York teams. The only New York football team is the Buffalo Bills.
Well, my dad's a big Bills fan. My grandfather was. I have a bunch of like family friends that were, and so I mean, and I never rooted for the Bills. I will now because of a bunch of other things have happened in my life. But at the time I was very happy. Now I wish that field goal would have gone in.
I did learn one thing in yesterday's Super Bowl. Marv Levy is still alive.
Is he?
Yeah, I didn't know that. But they brought that up yesterday. Jim Nantz said, oh, he's living in Chicago these days. And I was like, what?
Marv Levy?
Marv Levy's
is he like
still alive?
Years old?
He's, I think, 95 or 96.
That is crazy.
Because they showed it was, when they were talking about Bruce Arians as an old coach, they said Marv Levy was like 70 years old. And then Jim Nantz says, he's still alive. And I'm like, he was 70 in like 1992? And he, what? But anyway.
All right, we should move on to our number fours. What's your number four?
Number four is the Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl, not the Andy Reid forgets clock management one, but the Nick Foles.
That was your number four?
Yeah. Okay. One of the higher scoring Super Bowls. Another iconic play in the Philly special.
Oh,
back and forth.
That was,
I mean,
like, stolen from earlier in the year with the Sooners, but whatever.
Yeah, and then Michigan State ran it on Michigan a year later.
Right.
But I mean, Tom Brady threw for 500 yards and didn't win the game, which tells you a lot about how exciting that game was.
He had a great second half.
Yeah, it was really back and forth, high action. So, also, it was a Super Bowl in the north, where it's supposed to be, in Minneapolis. Super Bowls, I mean, it really should be outdoors in the frozen tundra. It's the only good thing I'll ever say about Green Bay is they should host the Super Bowl every year.
Maybe they can play it in Saskatoon.
Yeah.
Alex would be in. Would you go?
Where the Blues are supposed to move before the dog food company bought them. All right, number four, your turn.
I had the Super Bowl 44, the Saints and Colts, 31-17.
Yeah.
I liked the Saints when, with Sean Payton for those few years, and when they got Breeze and Reggie Bush, and that offense really changed. And also, this was, do you remember the onside kick to start the second
half?
Yeah,
that's the...
That was...
If we're talking... All of these have the iconic plays.
Right. That was amazing, and I was happy to see New Orleans finally win a Super Bowl and Drew Brees. And,
reminds
and
you of when people used to recover onside kicks, too.
When you were allowed to
recover. Back when football was great. I was cheering for the Colts because I was a Peyton fan for that.
Yeah.
But I was very happy for the Saints. Actually, I was slightly sad because it was at the Lions were getting reduced. You know, the list of the tortured franchises to never win was shrinking. But they deserved it, so I was happy for that.
That was a good game. What was your number three?
My number three is the San Antonio Holmes Super Bowl.
Another one of my least favorites.
What, are you a Steelers or a Cardinals fan?
Steelers are one of the teams I will root against.
So, that Super Bowl, again, has...
Although Lamar Woodley got a Super Bowl ring that year, so I was happy for him.
That Super Bowl has extremely iconic plays as well. The James Harrison 99-yard...
That was insane.
...interception return for the touchdown, the San Antonio Holmes catch. I mean... What, two, basically...
Steve Breston had a touchdown in that game, I believe.
Two-minute drills, more or less, where the Cardinals go down and score, and then the Steelers return in kind.
True.
I mean, a lot of action, really exciting game. So I was kind of... I mean, I was cheering for the Steelers, but I was fine with the Cardinals as well.
I was also a big Kurt Warner fan.
I also thought the contrast of the jerseys was really nice in that game. I just thought the gold and black mixed really well with the red.
Maybe our intros should be your update on aesthetics. All right. My number three was, I would just spoiled it with being a Kurt Warner fan, was Super Bowl 34, the Rams 23, Titans 16. The greatest show on turf that year was, I just re-fell in love with football watching their offense with Marshall Faulk and Bruce and Holt and Warner. And then their playoff games got tough and close. They eked them out and finally took the lead against the Titans. And Steve McNair leads him all the way down, and Mike Jones, who no one has ever heard of in any way, makes probably the best tackle in Super Bowl history, dropping Kevin Dyson on the 1 yard line as he reaches out for the goal line. And that's like probably one of the most iconic endings to a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Shout out to Dick Vermeil for getting his Super Bowl ring that year.
Crossing the Rams off the list.
Yeah.
All right, your number two.
My number two is the Seahawks Patriots.
Yes.
Super Bowl.
That's a great one.
I think it's 49 was that number. But, you know, there's a lot there in terms of the play that very closely precedes the Malcolm Butler play is a catch by Jermaine Kearse that you may remember that bounces off every body part before he catches it.
Yes.
I mean, that catch would be in the tier of another Super Bowl that will be mentioned very soon, and another famous play. I mean, it would be in that tier if the Seahawks had won the game. I mean, that was an incredible play everyone forgot.
Yeah.
Because Malcolm Butler, who we should really give all the credit to Matt Patricia for making the greatest call in... He said that in an interview one time, that play was all him, so...
Do you give Butler a lot of credit for that? Is that just a great play?
It's a great play, yeah.
Do you, and he said he recognized it.
Yeah.
So he recognized what they were trying to do and knew the play and jumped the route.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't hate the Seahawks throwing there. I hate the play call.
Like a slant?
Yeah. Because there's so much risk in that. Imagine if Malcolm Butler doesn't catch it, but it just pops up in the air, right? There's just
then
so much risk.
Everyone can catch it.
If you have Calvin Johnson, you can throw a jump ball. What I would have done if you're throwing it is do the play where everyone's at the goal line tight, and then you do the play action, the tight end just leaks into the back of the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
The Lions have never covered that play once in my entire life, so it's my go-to in that situation.
Do you have a spreadsheet of all the times they've tried?
I've never seen them cover it well. But also in that Super Bowl, you have the the Katy Perry halftime show, which is famous for Left Shark, one of the great Super Bowl memes of all time.
She flew to the moon.
Yeah, it was a good halftime show, and it gave us a great meme. So, big thanks there. The only downside of the Super Bowl is that my Super Bowl birthday party for that year was canceled.
Because
you lived in Ann Arbor, you may remember it was a blizzard that
day.
Yes. So all the guests were unable to come. So it was just me at my party. But it was a great game, even though the team that I disliked the most won. So tells you how good of a game it was.
That's a fair point. My number two was Super Bowl 32, the Broncos 31, Packers 24. That was... So the first Super Bowl I ever watched was 24, and it was... the Broncos and 49ers, and my mom and grandma were big Elway fans, so I loved like the old Broncos uniforms, like with the orange and
the
blue helmets, and yeah, and so I kind of rooted for the Broncos. I was still a Jets fan, but like I rooted for the Broncos, and I was really happy to be able to see Elway get his ring. He stayed with the same team his whole career. He was a phenomenal quarterback, and then he had that iconic play again with his helicopter run on third down where he gets flipped around and gets the first down and they win the game. And what Pat Bowlen's words, what this one's for John. I thought that was really cool. I was a big fan of that Super Bowl.
Hey, the Packers lost, so I'll sign up for that Super Bowl.
All right. What's your number one?
My number one is Super Bowl 42, the 16-0 Patriots against the...
Oh, yeah.
The New York Giants.
That was such a boring Super Bowl.
No, it wasn't.
No.
I mean, it was great defense.
Okay. In some ways, yeah.
But, I mean, it had the great storyline, right? Like, the Patriots are trying. Number one, they have, you know, an impeccable offense.
Supposedly.
With Randy Moss has the just gigantic year. That was Tom Brady's best statistical season.
Yeah. Wes Welker.
And so, you know, the Patriots are flying in. They've been untouchable. They haven't lost a game. You've got this scrappy defensive Giants team that...
A little more than scrappy.
That had just gone into Lambeau and had beaten a really good Packers team in the NFC.
That's why you like them.
I mean, the 2007 Giants might be my, like, I don't know, the team I'm thankful for the most, and that they fell both the Packers and the Patriots in consecutive weeks. And they did it again 4 years later.
We wanted the Patriots to win that because now we don't have to deal with the because now we still have to deal with the Dolphins popping champagne after every team loses a game, which is like
it's kind of weird.
Old.
It's kind of weird, but
and who likes the Dolphins?
Not Stephen Ross.
Not us Jets fans.
But you know, I hated the Patriots my entire life. I hated Tom Brady my entire life.
You have a lot of hatred in this podcast going on.
It's just the Packers and Patriots. They're the only two football teams I hate.
We're talking about, apparently.
And so I was extremely happy that the Giants won that. I saved the Ann Arbor News copy the next day. So that's why you got to love Eli Manning.
I mean,
those two random Super Bowl victories.
He was totally within the grasp.
And of course, it has the greatest play in Super Bowl history in David Tyree's helmet catch.
Which was a sack.
Which, by the way, Joe Buck... awful call of that. This is just a broadcasting critique.
Who don't you hate?
Have you ever listened to Joe Buck's call of that play?
No.
It's just like, Manning's under pressure. He throws it, and it's caught. I mean, you would have no idea of the stakes there. And obviously, you know, TV's different than radio. You have moving pictures. You can't go over the top. But it was a little lacking. I'll give Joe Buck credit. He's improved a lot over the last 10 years.
Okay.
That would haunt me if I were a broadcaster, that you get the biggest play of your career and you biff it like that.
So my number one was Super Bowl 51, which was Patriots 34, Falcons 28. So sorry to my Falcons friends out there. I have some of those. I know we have very different takes on Brady, and that's fine. But
I mean, I don't think our takes are that different.
I mean,
we both know he's a great player.
We have different opinions on our enjoyment of Tom Brady. But, like, I mean, even I was, like, starting to doubt there. Like, okay, this is something that even he can't get out of. And I know, I lived in Atlanta, and they have all these collapses and blah, blah, blah. And I get that. But that was, like, flirting with, there's no way. This is, I mean, they had to get multiple two-point conversions just to get back in the game. And then it was just to tie, and then who knows what happens in overtime. And then, plus it has like two of the greatest catches. Like, you talk about that catch with Tyree. That was a good catch. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But do you remember the two catches from this game? The Julio Jones catch that, like,
where they don't score
because they take a bad sack and end up having to punt because they're so far back.
That's what decided the game.
But the Julio Jones catch was insane. That was the best catch. That was better than the Tyree catch. I mean, I saw that and I was like, there's no way. And then Julian Edelman makes an even better catch.
Yeah, that's another reason to dislike the Super Bowl. Julian Edelman making a great catch there.
I'm going to fire you. I'm going to have to get like a new host. Was Craig here?
P-E-D
Craig, are you here?
Anyway.
And so, like, those two catches within back-to-back drives, they bring back their two-point conversion play where Brady fakes a snap that goes over his head. Like, I actually called that. I was watching with my friend, and I was like, oh, man, they went for two back against the Panthers, and they did this play where they faked the snap over his head, and they did it, and it worked again because they haven't done it in, what, 11 years or whatever it was, 12 years. But that was an insane Super Bowl because you think it's over and it's not. And then it's, I think, the only Super Bowl that goes to overtime.
Correct.
So
what I'll say about that Super Bowl is that I like back and forth games. So like for that Super Bowl, it was good for 4 minutes. Otherwise, it was either one team blowing the other team out or the other team blowing the other team out. There's no like competitive action. There's no like back and forth. One team's driving, the other team's driving. So like,
you like competitive games better than insane endings?
Yeah. I mean, if a Super Bowl made me bored for most of it, then it can't be in the top. That's my philosophy. I mean, it was close to the Super Bowl birthday party where the guests were playing chess in the second half. That
Was that the Seahawks?
Yeah, it was Seahawks Broncos. But no, we were playing pool. We were just, I mean, were barely watching the game for most of that game.
How many games of chess were going on simultaneously?
Oh, it was just one. But it was an intense game. Lots of viewers.
So you were did you like have seating around this chess board?
Yeah, there was one person over there, one person there. They're playing chess. Then there's spectators around.
How many spectators
around the table?
There?
Well, it was all the guests at the party. It was probably
were there
10,
mumblings
10
about what the next move should be?
Oh yeah, I mean it was intense. You
have some wild parties, don't you?
So no, but like a lot of the guests at the Falcons Patriots were like, oh, this game's over. Like we're playing pool.
And
we're not paying attention.
And then they were wrong.
Yeah,
is why last night you were like, oh, this game's over. And you were right. But like Mahomes brought them down the field two or three times. They almost get in there. But the Bucs make good stands on defense and they get pressure. And it's like people who thought the game was over. Like, have you not watched Patrick Mahomes the last few years? Dude's down and out like crazy. That's why what made it entertaining.
Since Seth wants this podcast to be Lions Takes, I'll give him this. That Super Bowl is why there's 5% of me that wants the Lions to never make the Super Bowl. Because if they make the Super Bowl, what is going to happen is what happened to the Falcons. It will absolutely. That's it. Like, every Lions fan knows that's what happens if Lions make the Super Bowl. Because it will be just like that. Up 28-3, and then it just collapses. We've seen that a million times in over the years. That's what it would be like if they were in the Super Bowl. 100%.
I think we have to end this podcast on your Lions take.
Also, shout out to Calvin Johnson for making the Hall of Fame.
And Charles Woodson.
Yeah. Listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 3.12 for David Nasternak and Alex Drain. Next week, hockey!